Thank you for joining us here on The Green Revolution, Blessed Welcome or Accursed Method. I'm your host, Denny Proto. In the early to mid-1940s, the importation of wheat in Mexico was in high demand, and the country's Ministry of Agriculture needed a solution to overcome this issue. With the help of the Rockefeller Foundation, the Cooperative Wheat Research and Production Program was founded, with the goal to boost the wheat production process. Four American men were recruited to help that program. One of them was Norman Borlaug. A graduate from the University of Minnesota, Borlaug conventionally bred for the next 15 years, a kind of wheat that was high yield and disease resistant, requiring high quantities of water and fertilizer. Coining the term Green Revolution, his methods were soon put to place in other countries all over the world, such as Japan and India. For his accomplishments in the increase of food supply, Borlaug was given the Nobel Peace Prize in 1970. However, today these kind of technologies have also proven to be quite controversial, affecting farmers and their properties in and around Africa. Organizations like AgriWatch believe that the Gates Foundation's approach to the agricultural development in Africa is likely to bring the same negative impacts of the original Green Revolution to the continent at the expense of small farmers and the environment. Benjamin Gardner is an assistant interdisciplinary studies professor of culture, global, and environmental studies at the University of Washington, Bothell. While not a member of AgriWatch, he said that there are a lot of similarities between the two Green Revolutions and expressed similar concerns.
And in many ways, the new Green Revolution is no different. It promotes a very similar mindset. It sort of argues that there are more people and more people are hungry because there's not enough food being produced. So it makes an argument for increasing this sort of technology to raise yields. And what it does is it demands higher inputs. It demands higher capital and sometimes labor or technological inputs. And that puts pressure on farmers, basically. It puts the same kind of pressures that it did in the past. And, you know, one way this is different, whereas farmers will see this as in their best interests, and all that the international community needs to do is give farmers access to capital. And so this is one of this interesting places where something like microcredit, for instance, and biotechnology come together. And so advocates of the new Green Revolution would argue that all farmers really now need are loans. They need access to new capital to be able to afford the inputs that it will take, let's say, to have these higher yielding biotechnologically designed seeds, and that ultimately that will pay for itself tenfold, right? And that's one of the arguments that the farmers will do better. They will be able to make more and sell more. But what that does is that takes the risk, of large-scale production, and it puts it on the backs of individual farmers. So, you know, there are some distinctions, but in many ways, there's not that much different between what we might call the contemporary Green Revolution, which is focused on high yields, high input, increasingly biotech seeds, and increasingly sold by a handful of corporations to an earlier generation where there were different delivery mechanisms, but ultimately very similar dynamics.
It is set out as a growth corridor to bring together critical investment within an area where you can actually reduce transaction costs and have a synergy along the whole value chain of agriculture. Agriculture seems to be very much disconnected, dissected into the various parts of the chain. But if you brought a lot of the key sectors or players together, you would be able to not only boost production, but also create opportunities.
That was Namanga Ngogi, the president of the Alliance for a Green Revolution in Africa, speaking before the World Economic Forum in June 2009. In August of this past year, the Seattle-based Gates Foundation, along with their partnerships with the Rockefeller Foundation, invested 500,000 shares in Monsanto, a multinational agricultural and biotechnological corporation that is known for its production of genetically modified seeds. While the alliance believes that what they are doing is right, other parties disagree. Josbet Nagonyo is one of them. As the founder and director of the African Network for Animal Welfare, he explained AGRA is not listening to the farmers, and mentioned how the impact of the purchase affected farmers.
However, I would just like to emphasize that the issue, the idea of AGRA. AGRA is really a bad idea for Africa, because Africa really has not been involved. Farmers view it as foreign, as an outfit that is not for them. So we need to reconsider the whole concept of AGRA. The focus is misplaced. If we look at what the farmers need, water, for instance, to maybe irrigate their farms, resources to make sure that they have infrastructure that can get them to the markets or get their foods to the market. GMOs, you know, and GMO technology, which we felt that was not right, and we raised actually farmers that we work with were very concerned.
Dennis Krokoko is a farming volunteer in the West Pokot district of Kenya. He explained the lack of employment in sectors outside of agriculture because of the programs the Gates Foundation will lead to land mobility, another problem of the first Green Revolution, where millions of peasant farmers and indigenous people were pushed off their land and out of farming, leading to an increase in poverty and hunger.
One thing is that many people are looking for white-collar jobs. They want to work in the offices, they want to be employed by the government, but the jobs are not available, jobs are not forthcoming. Many people have, you know, graduated, they have gone to train to colleges, they have trained, but jobs are not there. So the only alternative is farming.
Back home, Professor Gardner offered some suggestions into how we can become more agriculturally sustainable.
So as consumers, we have a number of roles to play. I mean, one is being willing and able to pay more money for our food, but it's also to get involved in the kind of political and social movements that call into question the very practices that enable things like the current Green Revolution, right? So our consumption practices matter, but on their own, they're not enough. I think it's really about educating ourselves to these larger dynamics and getting involved socially and politically.
You can find out more information about the efforts AgriWatch is doing and ways to join in on this effort by visiting their section on the Community Alliance for Global Justice website, where you can sign on their petition and look at other media resources. Just visit www.seattleglobaljustice.org. That concludes The Green Revolution, a blessed welcome or a cursed method. Thank you for joining us. I am Denny Proto, reporting for BIS MCS 472.